Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax, and today we are going to talk about having a rank and file union. So I've had guests on the show before who talk about the larger labor movement, and I really like having guests on like that, like C. Moline, Tyler Vassar, John Murphy, now Chris Pennock, where it puts what we're doing in perspective. And one of the things that I consistently complain about is the fact that we have what is referred to as a business union. And it's a union that's primarily just concerned about getting their money. And they amass these big stockpiles of wealth, which is what our union has done. And the goal that those of us who are pushing for our, you know, for a better role in this broader labor movement, what we really want is to have a rank and file democratic union where the voices of the members themselves, the workers, should carry the most weight. Well, I've been reading the NALC Constitution again and again because of all the crap that keeps coming up in my branch. I've been reading my branch's bylaws, and you know, these shenanigans keep forcing me back to these sources. I wish they would force my branch officers back to these sources, but apparently they're not about that life. So I have to keep reading them. And reading these rules caused me to realize something that was kind of unexpected. We already have a rank and file union. There are rules and policies in place that put the power in the hands of the members. But we have to use those rules and policies. They are useless if they sit there in the book fallow. So I know I've talked about some of this stuff before in passing or in just describing what's going on, and not to mention reading this stuff to you. But it's really worth digging into the way that union members are supposed to control their branches. The order of authority in the branch, you know, the president runs the branch, but the president isn't in charge of the branch. The members are in charge of that branch, and whatever the members decide supersedes whatever the president decides. So let's start with the NALC Constitution for federal and subordinate branches. This is just the regular constitution. It's divided into three parts. There's the national part, there's the part for subordinate branches, which is like yours and my branch, and then there's a part for state associations. So anyway, this is the middle part for federal and subordinate branches, and Article 11 is your right to appeal. And this is what it says. It reads in Section 1, an appeal may be taken to the president from the decision of any other officers of the branch. So if your branch treasurer makes a decision that you don't agree with, they do something that you think is out of line, you have the right to appeal what they've done to the president. So it's useful. I don't know how often that would come up, but it would come up at least sometimes. You know, you think somebody stepped out of line, maybe it's a, I'm not sure. Like maybe their formal step A is considered a branch, whoever the officers are. You know, this again, it's just recourse so that you can appeal to the president of the branch. I used it at my own branch when the branch secretary went off the rails and started grossly overstepping his authority. I brought that to the president because that's how it's handled in Article 11. And I said, hey, I don't think our branch secretary, the goodest oldest boy, has the right to do this. And of course, the president said, well, I think he does. Appeal denied. But that's the deal. So it's useful, but it does keep the power in the hands of the officers. Now, Section 1 goes on to say that you may appeal to the branch from any decisions of the president. This puts the power in the hands of the branch. And any decision of the president can be appealed to the branch. That's what it says. An appeal may be taken to the president from the decision of any officers of the branch and to the branch from any decisions of the president. Any decisions. The president is not in charge of your branch. You are in charge. Your brothers and sisters and siblings, You guys are in charge of the branch. And whatever nonsense your president does, you can appeal that to the branch. It'll come up at the next branch meeting. It'll be an item for action. And you will get to make your case to the branch, and the branch will decide whether the decision of your president stands or doesn't. It's up to the members. But of course, that means you're going to have to argue to the members. Members are going to have to agree with you, and they may not. But that is their right. That is their place. This ultimate authority, again, does not lie with the president. So now we get to Article 10. This is how you bring charges against any member of the branch who shall violate the Constitution or bylaws of the association or branch. That includes branch officers, if they're not faithfully performing their job, if they're not abiding by the bylaws. Now, ideally, you want to bring it to their attention first, or bring it to the branch president's attention if it's an officer who's breaking the bylaws or not doing something right. Give people a chance to correct it. It's possible that they don't realize that they're breaking the bylaws, right? That's what we hope. We hope that, oh, I wouldn't intentionally violate the bylaws, so thank you for bringing this to my attention. I will address it right away. I'll make sure that this gets fixed. You know, this is also if they're not faithfully performing their duties, that, hey, you're supposed to be doing X. Like, we're supposed to have a branch newsletter, and we don't have one. And so you bring that to the attention of your branch president, like, oh, hey, we should put some people together and get ourselves a branch newsletter, you know, or whatever it is. Bring it to their attention first. It's also possible when you bring it to their attention that you're interpreting something wrong. Like, I have certainly had that problem in the past where I've gone off half-cocked. I probably still do it. And so it's worthwhile, you know, you bring it to their attention first, and then they're like, no, you're misinterpreting. Like, my interpretation of my own bylaws is that we are supposed to have a branch newsletter that is just for our branch. And the good old boy interpretation of that clause is that we can have a branch newsletter. Not that we should. And apparently, that's the interpretation that they're acting on, because our branch of 1,500 members does not have a newsletter. And that's kind of embarrassing. Not as embarrassing as our website, but that's... Anyway, so the moral of the story here is that you have to at least give them the chance to do the right thing. And hopefully they don't respond by firing you from the Carrier Academy, like what happened to me when I brought to the attention, like, that we weren't doing the labor management meetings that we're supposed to be doing. But, you know, these are the chances you take. And back then, if I had known, like when I got fired from the Carrier Academy, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to that episode. It's the second one, how I got fired from the Carrier Academy the second time. I did not know about Article 11. Why would I? It never came up. You know, I wasn't to that part of the podcast yet. And so I didn't know that I could appeal his decision to the branch. Had I known, I would have done that absolutely. And I think I would still be a Carrier Academy instructor to this day. And who knows how interested I'd be in all this union reform. But, you know, I can't go back and undo the way it happened. What I can do instead is try to empower the rest of us and try to make sure that this kind of overstep and this kind of bad behavior doesn't go unchecked forever. You know, in your own branch, Article 11 applies, you can appeal. And Article 10 applies, you can bring people up on charges if you need to. And in Article 10, it reads, quote, any officer of the branch who shall fail or neglect to discharge the duties of their office or who may be guilty of gross misconduct, may be removed from office, end quote. This is our power. This is how we take our union back if the powers that be don't want to do it peacefully. If they want to just keep ignoring the bylaws, keep ignoring the Constitution, keep living their comfortable life away from the problems of the rank and file carrier, this is how we take it back. Ultimately, we have the power. It's like Glinda the Good Witch said, you've always had the power, my dear. You've had it all along. I don't know how accurate that. That's probably a perfect impression. I have not watched that movie in about 40 years. But, you know, you get the idea, right? That is what we can do. The problem, of course, is in getting people to use that power. Now, the first problem is people don't even know they have that power. And so that's what we're trying to fix here. That's always been the mission of Classes of Male. Try to inform, try to empower. And now if people know they have that power, now you got to get them to use that power. And so they need to care. They need to be activated. And they have to come to the meetings. You know, hopefully you're in a branch that allows for Zoom meetings where at least people can know what's going on if they can't physically get to the union hall. But generally the decisions are made by the people who show up to the meetings. The meeting is where that rank and file strength gets displayed. The meeting is where at the last meeting, I filed my appeal and we wound up winning 52-23. That's activism. That's reform. That is the members of the branch taking that power back. So, branch policy, whether it's a change to the bylaws, whether it's the way they're going to send people to classes, whether it's going to bring somebody in to be a speaker, any of that is all set by the people who show up to the branch meetings. That's where the power is. And the president must obey the will of the branch. So I implore you, go to your branch meetings. Question your leaders. Article 11 can be used on the spot. If you disagree with something your president's done or one of the branch officers has done, you can invoke Article 11 right there. So when I got fired as an alternate steward, I know you just heard this story in the last couple episodes, I then told the president, well, I'm going to be appealing your decision to fire me under Article 11. Will I be successful in that appeal? Well, it'll be up to the people who show up at the branch meeting and, you know, they're going to have to vote and decide whether my appeal is valid. But there is an additional complicating factor, and that is that my local union president is refusing to allow my Article 11 appeal because I can appeal any decision of the president, and he's saying, I didn't make a decision. You were removed as a steward automatically. And sorry for rehashing it, but you know, when I say, well, what do you mean automatic? This is not in the Constitution. Can you show me where that rule is that says that there's like a term limit for an appointed steward? Of course, he can't point to it because that's not what happened. He decided to get rid of me because he decided that I can file an Article 11 appeal, an appeal to the branch. So what happens if he ignores it? What if we show up for the meeting? Like, this is where it left off. You know, I sent that dude an email and I went through the entire NALC Constitution for subordinate and federal branches, article by article. And every single one I annotated, like Article 1 is about naming your branch. And so I write down Article 1, name and function or whatever, name and purpose. And I said, this article is about naming your branch. There's nothing in there about term limits for appointed stewards. And then Article 2 is about being who counts as a member. And I said, again, there's nothing in here about term limits for stewards. And I went through the entire Constitution for federal or subordinate and federal branches, and there ain't nothing in there. And I said, so look, you got a choice. You can either show me where you're getting this rule from, or you can put my appeal on the agenda at the next meeting. It's going to be one or the other. And he responded by not responding. Of course, he can't respond by showing me the rule because it's not there, because it doesn't fucking exist. So what's he going to do? What happens now if we get to the meeting and my appeal is not on the agenda? What do we do then? Well, then it becomes a mess, because now I have to try to get my appeal put on the agenda. So I will rise using Robert's rules, and we're probably going to have another Robert's rules episode at some point. I will rise under a point of order and say, hey, point of order, my appeal is supposed to be at the beginning of the agenda. And he's going to say, no, it's not, because I didn't make a decision. And then we'll argue back and forth, and it will be awful. And it is not something that I want. So I don't want to do any of this shit. But I'm not just going to be bullied. I'm not going to be pushed around by people who won't even bother themselves to read the goddamn rules. So that'll be the beginning of the meeting. And this is the problem with, this is the problem that I'm running into now. Is, okay, we've got Article 11. I can appeal these decisions. I used Article 11 at the last meeting, and I was successful. You know, I appealed the decision of the president that the branch secretary had the authority to delay these Article 10 charges, and the branch wound up ruling on that, that the branch has that authority. So the other issue we have, though, is like, you're still essentially relying on the union officers to do this enforcement. So Michael and I, or technically it was Michael. Michael brought charges against our election chair all the way back in October. And as I record this, it's, what day is it today? It is January 28th. We brought charges against the election chair in October. They should have been read at the beginning of November at the November meeting. And we are now at January 28th and nothing has been done to the end of investigating those charges and bringing them to a conclusion. Nothing. And when I wrote to the branch president to say, hey, what's going on with these charges? His response was, well, it's got nothing to do with me. You need to contact the people who are on the investigating committee. And A, it's not true because he has general supervisory authority over the branch and he's the one who appointed the people to be on that committee. But I said, okay, give me their contact information. And he never did. And I just wrote to him again a couple days ago. Hey, nothing still has been done about these charges. And mind you, there's also still outstanding Article 10 charges that the branch the election chair filed against Michael and me. And we want to get up in front of the branch and defend against those charges. And so I write to him and I'm like, hey, man, what steps are you taking to make sure that this gets done? Because we're only like a week away from the next meeting. It can't be delayed again. It has to get resolved. And his response? No response. Did not bother to answer. Which tells me he's doing nothing. Because why would he? Why would he want the investigation into the election improprieties to continue? That can only end badly for him. So here we have these outstanding Article 10 charges, and the very officers that we rely upon for this are thwarting that process. And then last meeting, there were two sets of Article 10 charges that were brought against our branch president, and they were given to the secretary well in advance of the meeting, and then the secretary decided to just sit on them and not serve those charges on the branch president. And so the entire process is now derailed, right? This process that's laid out in our Constitution that gives that power to the members of the branch is being ignored by our branch officers. It is being thwarted by our branch officers. So now what? Now what do we do? If you contact people at National and tell them that you're having a problem in your branch, you know what they tell you? Hey, man, that's a branch problem. You need to solve that within your branch. There's mechanisms in place that allow you to solve it. But what happens when the mechanism is broken? What happens when Article 10 and Article 11 are disregarded by your branch officers? What do you do then? Well, I guess I'm going to find out because that's what's happening in my branch. And I put in a text message to a National officer briefly explaining the situation and like, dude, what do? I need your advice. Where do I go next if this process is broken? And it turns out that I have to go to President Renfro and I have to send him a letter, you know, explaining what's going on and ask him to rule. And I don't know what he's going to do. Like, hey, you have to abide by the will of your branch. Oh, dude, because the other thing that's happened, you guys know we got that big victory that the branch is supposed to redo the election. Guess how many steps toward that have been taken so far? If you guess zero, you're a very good guesser. And again, we're asking our branch officers, hey, what's the schedule on getting this re-election done? You know, when are we going to do nominations? When does the announcement go out? Who's going to be overseeing it? And the response to that? Silence. So again, the will of the branch is being thwarted. So, yes, you have the power, but apparently sometimes it is a motherfucker trying to exercise it. But I'm going to keep at it, guys, and as I learn more about this process, you can bet I'm going to keep sharing it with you. So now, hopefully sometime tonight, I will write my big letter to Brian Renfro explaining to him what the issues are, including all the text messages and emails of, you know, of the non-responses and of people overstepping and thwarting the process and so on. And I don't know. I'll let you know how it goes. Oh, and then tomorrow, I finally meet with the investigator from the National Labor Relations Board. I've got like a 3-hour, it's not called a deposition, it's something else, but it's essentially a deposition about, you know, being threatened with discipline for engaging in LMRA protected activities in my free speech and my right to criticize union officers. So that'll be an interesting one. So anyway, things are lively around here. And again, as I learn more, you know, as I become more empowered by learning these rules, you can bet your ass I'm going to share it with you because this is your union and you deserve to be represented and you deserve the best representation you can get. Remember, these elected officers are your servant. They're in that position to serve you. It's what I tell people at my station when I am a steward is insofar as I am a steward, I am your servant. Put me to work, tell me what you need, and I'm going to go to bat for you. And that's the way our union officers need to be as well. So we're going to keep trying to hold them to that standard. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. I will catch you next time.